All right, this is Mike Howdery from Everybody Hates Cleveland, the podcast, and I'm here with Gage Will. This is another iteration of our preseason position preview podcast. We really love alliteration here. And today we're going to be talking about first base. Before we get into it, a bunch of stuff has dropped since the last time we dropped a podcast about what was the worst kept secret in the Cleveland professional baseball organization. And there's been some humorous comments about Francisco Lindor's first name. I don't really want to touch on either of those at the moment. We're just going to push through our position preview series. And probably, you know, everyone's opinions are their own on this. Please read the Athletic article. It's important, and where accountability is necessary, it should be had. But I think we're just going to sort of move past that and just talk about the baseball for the time being, which brings us to first base. So fire away your first big thought about first base in Cleveland in 2021.
It's time to get wrapped up in the Bobby Bradley show if you're into alliteration and Bobby Bradley hitting bombs.
Bobby Bradley hitting bombs. What a delight. Okay. All right. So, interestingly, this is like the first real vacuum at first base in a while, right? Because obviously Santana stepped away for a year, but it was the Edwin Encarnacion show in the middle of when he was gone. That year he was gone. So really, like, this is the first time this position is sort of shaken loose in 5 or 6 years. And it's been pretty stable in Cleveland. Obviously, Santana walked a ton, but was below average offensively in 2020. I'm not saying he was bad. It was a tiny sample. But that's just the reality of the line he posted. So there's real opportunity for them to improve production at first base as well. But it seems like we got a little bit of a poo-poo platter, and then we have a couple of guys who we don't know if they're going to play first base or not. And the guys we don't know if they're going to play first base or not are probably the guys we're most optimistic about offensively. So yeah. Second question, who gets the most plate appearances at first base in Cleveland 2021?
In 2021? Because I feel like I could answer this for the month of April pretty easily.
Okay, give me April.
April, I'm going to say Jake Bowers. So first of all, let's get this out of the way. It's not me selling you on Jake Bowers. It's not me trying to convince you that it wasn't painful to watch him provide enough windmill for Progressive Stadium all of 2019. But he doesn't have any options left, and Bobby Bradley has won. So for the month of April, I would say we're going to concede the plate appearances to Jake Bowers. That's just kind of how the Indians operate in the past, and they're not going to cut ties with a guy typically unless they have some inside info that we don't have from last year's alternate site and how he's worked over the offseason. But for the whole season, I'm going to throw a curveball, and I'm going to say Josh Naylor ends up with the most first base plate appearances.
Are they acquiring some outfielder I don't know about is going to displace Josh Naylor getting outfield and DH reps?
Daniel Johnson and Jordan Luplow platoon.
I love it. I love it. Okay. I think Gage is probably right. I think this is going to be an options game off the top, no matter how many spring bombs that Bobby Bradley hits. What sort of information do we glean from the fact that Bowers was healthy last year? He was at the alternate site. The Indians outfield was borderline humiliating from an offensive production standpoint. And look, he's not a great outfield defender, but he's had at least a competent bat. Usually, like, are we reading something into this? Is the organization more out on him than we think?
I definitely think there's something to that. I don't think they're necessarily extremely fond of him after that challenge trade with the Rays. I guess you could call it a challenge trade. It seems like the information they got from 2019 really soured them, both the production and the behind the scenes info. I would say yes, but at the same time, they didn't let Daniel Johnson get more than 13 plate appearances in 2020. So I think it's kind of hard to take a whole lot from 2020 altogether. There was a very direct path they were taking with that outfield situation.
All right. First, because I want to fight with Gage, I don't think it was a challenge trade. It was a money dump, and Yandy Diaz was attached to Moon Bunny, but we'll fight about that another time.
Hold on. And I loved Yandy Diaz. I think it was a challenge trade in the sense of they weren't, for whatever reason, Yandy wasn't getting playing time at the major league level.
I mean, I think even at the time, Yandy was a significantly better asset than Bowers, and the Rays literally sent money along with Bowers in the deal. So I don't think it's a challenge trade in the sense that this org was a little down on Diaz because of a certain person who manages the team, yes. But I mean, I think it is worth saying he was still a more significant asset, and it was also largely driven by the cash back relating to the Encarnacion deal.
Agreed. That's fair.
All right. We've negotiated a settlement there. let's talk about Bowers a little bit. Like, we'll talk about, I think it's just good to say, before we get into any prospects or anything, like, we have Bowers, we have Bradley, we have Naylor. Let's talk about what can go right and what can go wrong for each guy and how likely we think that is. And let's frame that discussion before I kick it back to you with Bowers. And we talked about this on the last podcast, that the threshold for first baseman is high. Defensive value is low for the position by most adjustments, because impact defenders there have less of an impact. Now, that's arguable. We can argue about first base defense another time. But the average big league first baseman is going to have an above average weighted runs created plus, or whatever offensive metric you use. It's a position where you can usually buy offense cheaply. This doesn't look like that's going to be the case for Cleveland, right? Like, it's each of these guys is projected to be below average offensively, which is significantly below the threshold for first base, except for Naylor, who's projected around average or slightly above. So let's talk about, can any of these guys leap above that threshold or meet that threshold? And let's talk about what would have to happen. What has to happen for that for Bowers?
Jake Bowers has to get back to, he's never had a problem with plate discipline. That's his calling card. That's how he can provide value to an offense. But in 2019, he didn't walk as much as he needed to, and he swung and missed even more than he thought he might. So that was a lethal combination. So for it to go right for Jake Bowers, he has to make a little bit more contact while drawing more walks, which is a weird needle to thread.
Yeah, and I would add on to another layer, which is when he makes contact, he has to actually hit the ball a little harder. His exit velos are like sub 50th percentile. Usually you want power out of this position. You're not going to get batting average, so you need walks and power to drive a little OBP ISO combo, is sort of my view. And we need him to add contact authority. And, you know, some guys have been able to do that. He's 25 now. This will be a tester season, but it's not a small amount either on either of these positions. Like, he needs to cut. He probably needs to increase his walk rate by 3 or 4% over 2019. And he probably needs to increase his ISO from 0.145 to 0.2 to get us to above average offensive player. What's the percentage chance you think that happens, Gage, Will?
Oh, and some people have accused me of being a Bowers homer because I think there are tools there where you could have a good hitter, but I'm still not bullish on him. I 20 to 30% chance he's still the first baseman in June, maybe.
Okay, before I move on to this next guy, let's talk about context. So Gage and I just said, oh, we need to see a little bit of strikeout rate cut. We need to see a walk rate spike. His K rates in the big leagues have been 27%. In the minors, they've been 15 to 22%. The next guy we're going to talk about, his big league K rate in just 50 PAs is 40%. We'll throw that out as epically horrendous, but dude's super young, whatever. Throw out that data and the fact that the team didn't give him an opportunity in 2020 when, once again, their offense was struggling. Which we're saying about a lot of guys right now, which I think is a theme with this organization. I run 33% strikeout rates in AAA guy. He also is I have enormous power guy. So he has to just cut those strikeout rates just enough to get just enough power into games. Is there anything else that needs to go right for Bobby Bradley for him to be an above average offensive player and an average first baseman in 2021?
He's going to have to walk more than he's shown in his profile if he wants to carry those K rates too. I said Bowers had a difficult needle to thread. Bradley's is just as difficult. No matter how many spring training bombs he hits, when you're striking out 33% of the time at the AAA level, that's terrifying. And one of my biggest concerns with Bobby Bradley is he never at AA, high A, triple A, he never posted a higher than a 120 weighted runs created plus with all that power in tow. So it's just hard to live striking out 30% of the time, especially when you try to transfer that from the triple A and double A pitching to major league pitching. That's almost an even more difficult needle to thread than Bowers' 25 to 27% strikeout ratio.
Yeah. So I guess another part to me is, and I think you keyed on it, one of the things I'm looking at whenever I look at these profiles is I look at like getting on base as a total tool set package. I think Gage does the same. So I'm not going to act like this is an individual thought. We look at getting on base and then power or contact authority. Right. And so it doesn't really matter how you do the getting on base thing for me. Like if you strike out 10% of the time, that's super low, but you hit for a really high batting average and don't walk, that's fine. Don't care. And if you hit for power, fine. If you strike out 30% of the time, but you walk 15% of the time, that's another way to get there. The problem with Bradley is I don't see which one of those is going to happen to get him to the like on base portion. He pulls the ball way too much to hit for a high batting average. Which is great because it helps him get to his power, but he's never going to hit for a high batting average. So for him to get on base enough to be an above average offensive player, then we need to say he either needs to stop pulling the ball, which will dent his power a little bit, or he needs to raise his walk rate. Both those things are pretty hard to do. And this is beyond just like, can he get to a power with enough frequency just based on reducing his strikeout rate? So I think the line is really thin. I think it's why like projection systems that are respected project him at 84 and 88, which are, you know, 10 to 20% below league average offense, which is just unacceptable for a first baseman. Can he outperform those? Absolutely. I'm thrilled to see him in good shape. We've seen him in really good shape before in break camp, and we've seen him struggle at the big league level. So what's the chance Bobby Bradley finally cuts those strikeouts enough and adds a little walk rate to get us to where his offense is above league average and he's a league average first baseman?
And I want to throw some context to that too. We're not saying Bradley's deficient in the walks drawn category. He actually profiles above average in that realm. But when you're striking out 30 to 30+% of the time, you need to carry a bigger walk rate than even average. And because he's not like, as Mike said, he's never going to be the average guy unless he significantly alters his approach. We could cut down on some of his power. I am not optimistic on Bradley. I'm not going to write him off. I'm kind of in the 20% camp of him being an effective big leaguer this season, along with Bowers, maybe even less. So I don't think either of them have vastly different odds outlooks on 2020. How about you?
I don't think so. And like, even though I've been in general a Bradley skeptic for the last, basically since 2018, I'm still more optimistic about Bradley because I just see a plus tool that's not tied to something. Bowers, I really like his walk rate. I think he's generally disciplined, but I think it's partly tied to some level of passivity. And I worry about, you know, what he has to give up to gain contact authority. So I'm probably a little more optimistic that Bradley figures it out, but in general, I'm around those same numbers. And I think it's also key to discuss, like, these guys aren't young anymore. Like, this is it. Bradley's 24 years, 9 months. Bowers is 25 years old. This is the end of the spring for Cleveland opportunities for a first baseman. or else they just need to spend the $2 million and go get an average or above hitter. It's not super hard. So this is it for their opportunities, which brings us a little bit to the guy who was drafted and developed significantly as a first baseman, moved to the outfield based on Eric Hosmer and other, you know, sort of blockades in San Diego, and Gage's pick for the driving first base plate appearance guy, Josh Naylor.
Yeah, and we talked about this towards the beginning too. It's, you need a plus to above average hitting from your first baseman more so than you need from a corner outfielder even. So even though the outlooks aren't great on Bradley or Bowers from a comprehensive point of view, I am firmly in the camp of I'm okay with them starting Naylor out in right field just to see if we can get him to stick there, because as we get to 2022, 2023, if you got Naylor stuck in one of those corners, the rest of the roster construction just gets so much easier. It's so much easier to find a $4 or $5 million or $2 million first baseman that can be competent than a corner outfielder. So if Josh Naylor can stick in one of those corners in these first few months, eventually I think he's going to get forced to first base, because past Bradley and Bowers, I don't know if there are legitimate first base options, and you're not going to want to stick Nolan Jones at first base or whatever comes down the line. So even though he profiles as, you might be able to even profile the offense to have a better potential outlook by putting Naylor at first base right now, I think the long-term play here is more the smart one. Let's try to stick with Naylor in a corner.
So this is a really interesting, and this will sort of bring us to the person that the prospect everyone will speculate about with Nolan Jones, but they've sort of collected this group of between Reyes, Naylor, Bradley Bowers, where, I mean, Naylor and Reyes look mildly passable in the outfield, I guess. And I appreciate that they both make an effort and really want to stay engaged defensively. That's a really positive thing, and you don't ever want to criticize that. But with Rosario being a better, somehow being the best defender of that group, which is absolutely hilarious. And they are punting on those corners defense so hard, which is fine. But once you realize that, if you're playing Rosario in one corner and Reyes in the other, and I think they do prefer Reyes as a defender to Naylor, or maybe it's a coin flip. What's your vibe on that?
It seems like from the early going, they really want Josh Naylor to stick in right field.
All right. All right. So we'll go with that. So Naylor goes out there for a while and Reyes DHs, but it really seems like one of Reyes and Naylor are going to end up getting some decent first base time in the future. And then you can, you know, maybe they'll rotate DH. We'll see what happens. But let's talk about, so we talked about how difficult the paths were, or the significant barriers between Bowers and Bradley being productive offensively. It looks like, and in my view, in part because a lot of the underlying statistics and things that Naylor does well are things that I like. So I will admit my bias there. But to me, his path to being a productive offensive player looks a lot more obvious.
Yeah.
What are the barriers?
That's borne out in the projections compared to the other two. All the systems like him a little bit more because of some of those traits. Maybe he can smack the ball pretty well. His exit velocity, contact authority is there. He doesn't draw as many walks, but he's also a kind of guy that hits it to each field more so than the others. He's not a dead pull, dead red type. And he doesn't strike out as much. He puts more balls in play. He's going to be a optimal 15% K rate type guy, hopefully. But the barrier with him is pretty much that the K rate hikes and the walk rate declines. If he stops making contact with authority, then all of a sudden you have an empty tooled player.
Yes.
And I'm not trying to say, because like Mike, I am a fan of Josh Naylor. I like what he brings to the table. Even though he doesn't draw a ton of walks, he's capable of drawing walks. He can be about league average there, but he's never going to blow it away. I think there is a decent chance of that walk rate cratering like it kind of did in his brief 2020 campaign, and the K rate rising to some unprecedented type levels, and him just never being a good enough hitter to overcome those, even though he has a contact authority. So I'm kind of concerned that he might not just be able to get on base enough, I guess.
Okay, so let's dive in. And obviously, you may or may not have heard our sneaky alarm, and we meant to only talk for 20 minutes. But I do think first base is one of the more fascinating positions on this roster. So I'm willing to give it a little more time. So the contact authority, I think, is the biggest thing. Like, if you look at him, or if you read any scouting report of the last, like, 4 or 5 years about him, it's literally shocking how little power he gets into games. And I think a little bit of that has been him selling out for contact in the minor leagues at different points, and mostly in the major leagues. The guy has what some would deem like impact raw power. And we saw it a little bit in a random playoff game, a couple of random playoff games, and we saw him really pulling baseballs with authority, but we haven't seen it in a sustained way. It's once again one of those things where, beyond pedigree, I really like to bet on players who get to the big leagues at 21, who look passable offensively at 21. Look, it's an 89 WRC plus at 21 years old in the big leagues. We like that. He really, you know, he makes a ton of contact, which I really like. Gage points to the walk rate. It's a strong point. You know, his O swing is average or a little higher. One of the problems that will always hurt his walk rate is actually, you know, I think a little bit is contact rate. I mean, I think he makes contact with too many bad pitches outside of the zone, which is why he doesn't always punish pitches. I think he ends up, you know, punishing himself by making contact with O swing too much. I just think that there is a really clear path here. I think the underlying contact skills are good. I think he's relatively patient, though he'll never be, I don't think, impact from a discipline perspective. But to me, it's just, it's all about contact rates and age and level look really strong, and he has massive raw power, and I'm gonna bet on them being able to get a little more of that raw power into games enough to make him an above average hitter.
Yeah, he's kind of got the Yandy Diaz issue a little bit too, where he can't get the ball off the ground, and that's kind of what's plagued his major league plate appearances so far. I mean, when you're hitting two out of every or twice as many ground balls as fly balls, it's hard to have that contact authority make a true impact.
It's true. And we really don't love that. And I mean, that'll be ultimately be a deciding factor. I mean, look, like, these are thresholds. There are thresholds for me that, you know, in reality, from a wagering perspective, I think there's like, I would say there's a 50% plus that he's an average to above average offensive player for a few years for me. And I'm like, I'm at like 20% chance of that happening for Bradley and probably 15% for Bowers.
Yeah.
So Naylor is not a certain thing.
No, but even that 50% that you mentioned is huge for a Cleveland outfield. If he could stick out there that hasn't been able to find a 50-foot average hitter for, I mean, you've had random Lonnie Chisenhall and Tyler Naquin streaks, but beyond that, what outfielder have they developed to even get to that 50-plus percent average hitter plateau? Brantley.
Oh boy.
So
I mean,
even if we're bullish on his ceiling, there's still a floor there that, with how much he makes contact, I'm not really worried about him cratering completely.
Yeah, no, I think his offensive floor for this team that watched so many at bats go to DeShields and Allen and a struggling and some other folks. I mean, in part, it's just a wonky sample, I think, with Luplo. I think he's a much better player than he showed. But in the end, I just think he really brings a nice offensive floor. Like, I don't think he'll ever be a truly impact bat, but I think there's a really solid chance he's average to above average. And I think there's a really solid chance he's just slightly below average. And like, this team just sorely needs that offensively. And when you start thinking about lineup construction, that becomes so obvious. Like, if Naylor isn't good, he's probably your fifth best hitter, and that's a real problem.
Yeah, they're really going to need a jump from one of these. I mean, you know what you're getting from Rosario, but and Jose Ramirez and Cesar Hernandez and even Framil Reyes to a degree. But beyond that, you need a couple jumps if you really want to compete. And Naylor kind of has to be one of them.
All right. Last topic. We like to sort of talk about the system and who we could anticipate. And I don't want to get too ahead. You know, you have, I think a lot of times a first base prospect is very uncommon and sort of a mythic creature. Because generally if you're at first base, when you're in the lower minors, that's a pretty bad sign about your overall athleticism. It's incredibly rare. You have a top prospect in the lower minors at first base. Like they're outliers. It's like Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson, who are both like top five picks and truly impact bat draft picks. But it's just not super common. So I think the most obvious ones you want to look at are ones who you expect to slide there eventually. And the one that probably everyone is thinking about right now is Nolan Jones. I don't think there's anybody else particularly close. Junkyezi Noel was in rookie ball 2 years ago. That's about it. No one else really has the bat. I mean, another one who may actually end up there, though he's probably athletic enough to end up somewhere else if he doesn't stick at catcher, is probably Josh Naylor's brother, Bo Naylor. And that's a long time away. And I think there's real optimism he sticks long term. So I don't want to talk about that. So Nolan Jones, do you think he ends up at first base by 2023?
I think I would put even more. I think we can rule out third base, probably. So I would put even money, not completely rule out, but mostly, and I would put even money on corner outfield and first base for Nolan Jones right now.
I would bet a lot more on him being a corner outfielder. He's got, I mean, just from his defensive tools, he's not an impact athlete, but he's a little faster than Naylor and Reyes types. He's got probably slightly above median sprint speed. He's got a really strong arm. He's got a plus-plus arm, which is one of the reasons he still kind of works at third base, even though his lateral and quick-twitch movements aren't awesome. So I would bet they push aggressively to try and fit him in a corner outfield spot first. And they're going to do that with every one of these guys who looks like they have a decent-ish bat and probably look better at first base defensively. But just because of, you know, the thresholds to be a good player offensively in the outfield versus first base, it's just so much easier to go by cheap first base production. So they're going to try and push these guys to be in the corners as much as possible before they give up on that notion. So,
and I'm not trying to downplay Nolan Jones's athleticism. He's clearly stuck at third base throughout the whole minor leagues. I just think the way that the roster and everything falls in the immediate future, I'm not so sure where that first baseman comes from in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's more likely that he reaches a defensive competency higher than Reyes or Naylor. I think that's pretty likely in the corner outfield spots. And with that in mind, I think it's probably more likely he ends up in a corner outfield spot than first base, but I definitely wouldn't rule it out. I mean, he's like 6'5". He's kind of a textbook first baseman too, as well. So I think there's a real chance there.
And I want to give a plug. I don't want to just pass Junkyezi Noel. I think it's pretty, we didn't have any data from him at the minor league level last year, but I think it's pretty impressive that that kid went to Arizona and rookie ball and as a 17 and 18 year old and walked competent. I know rookie Arizona stats can be wonky, but he walked at a competent clip and basically hit the ball pretty well. So I'm really curious to see where Junkyezi Noel down the pipeline lands to start this year. I think it might be probably in Lynchburg to start, but I'll be following his name closely as the summer progresses.
Yeah, no, he's a really interesting piece, and I don't want to ignore him. In part, it's become so difficult with that loss of a season to look at guys who are in rookie and AZL action and like attempt to forecast where they're going to be in 2021, though it's endlessly fascinating. It's just so with that in mind,
believe he's only 19 still, not even 20 yet.
I know. I mean, I was just looking at Bradley's profile before we got on the podcast, and like I'd emphasize that, you know, like we're closing in on the time here. He's 24 years old and 9 months. And also like he's been in the system for like 6 or 7 years. And I feel like he's been in the system since I was in college. It's just unbelievable. All right. So we're going to close out here. Final thoughts, first base, summarize the position in a couple of sentences.
I think at the start, we'll see Jake Bowers for about 150 plate appearances. And then the most likely path is we've had enough of that experiment. So then maybe let's see 150 plate appearances of Bobby Bradley. And let's just hope one of them stick.
Yeah, I think that's the way it goes. I think this is a position that either Naylor seizes or they end up purchasing someone for signing someone for $5 million in the offseason to buy some cheap offense. I think that's probably the way it goes.
And the interesting thing with first base is you can pretty much always find a competent first base bat available for a lower level prospect at the trade deadline if they need to.
Yeah, no, that's a great point as well. There's always an expiring with 120 WRC plus that you can give up like some random flyer for. So
we'll call it the Mitch Moreland clause.
The Mitch Moreland clause. You know, just like obvious pickups like Yonder Alonso, crater, or Brandon Moss, crater. Ones like those. Offense is easy to buy.
Hey, anyway, Mike Napoli worked out.
Yeah, a little while. Yeah, he did. He did. I miss Mike. I missed that like 4 months at the front end when he was productive before he became a walking windmill. But he brought a lot of spunk. Nevertheless, this is the end of the first base position preview for Everybody Hates Cleveland, the podcast. We should be back soon talking about second base, Cesar Hernandez, Hiram Boyd's favorite, Yu Chang, why he may or may not be a superstar, and other hot topics.
Sell your Yu Chang stock.